Good Up is our space to talk about those experiences in life we didn't know we all had in common. We're the after work happy hour conversation with your best friend.
You got up bad, like, hello.
The place where you bring up the hard parts of life, the ones that made you laugh, and the things that made you who you are. Because who said becoming Good Up wasn't a little bit uncomfortable? Stay tuned for more information about this week's episode. Sup, bitches? I just...
You that choose violence every single time, hey, Aiza.
There's a reason, and we're going to talk about it in this episode of the Good Up Podcast.
Ooh, ooh.
Let's talk generational trauma.
Let me take a drink.
You know how people will be like, oh my God, you have your mother eyes, or you look just like your father. Your parents gave you all their genes. You know what else my parents gave me?
Those who can't see, you're missing out on quite the sight, because hey, Aiza and I are both here rocking our black, looking the fuck good, representing where the fuck we came from.
We got up bad,
really and truly. Like, I can't believe we had a name other than Good Up.
Listen, at the time I was like, I call everybody beautiful people. I'm just going to call it the beautiful
people. No, the podcast. Beautiful people podcast was fucking phenomenal.
Honestly, for the subject matter and everything we were talking about in the first season, which we'll still talk about some of that stuff now.
Talk about all that stuff.
It was very much about beautiful people's, you know, stories and all of that stuff. It was relevant. But now we've evolved. So we go to...
Yes.
So last week, it's also known as... 10 minutes ago, we were talking about...
Not the production secrets.
Also known as 10 minutes ago. We were talking about shadow work and the importance of shadow work. What is it? Why is it important? How do you do it? What does it look like? So in this episode, we're not just talking about generational trauma. We will be a lot, but... We're essentially going to talk about some of the things that might come up for you in doing your shadow work. Because a lot of us, especially those of us who are people of color, those of us who are black people, have generational trauma. We experience that. Mm-hmm. But it might not be the same for everybody. I understand that there's an alabaster delegation that listens to this podcast, and some of you might not have generational trauma. It's fine.
Well, shout out to y'all. I would love to know what that's like. Please.
But that's also not me negating that generational trauma doesn't necessarily come from just like the black experience. Generational trauma can show up in different ways. But I ramble in. We're going to talk about things that might come up when you do shadow work. Things you might realize about yourself, about your family. Why shadow work might be the key to you navigating that generational trauma. So
it absolutely is.
Deidre, I'm gonna pass the mic to you because you was the one who brought this up in the first place. So I'm gonna
show. Am I? So you okay? So you just made a very excellent point, and the reason why I'm sure you've heard the phrase "breaking generational curses," right?
Yeah, and I'll be like, them fuck get some big ass chain though. How do I do this?
But listen, now there's this large misconception where people feel like in order to break generational curses, they have to correct the people in their lineage. Breaking generational curses starts with you. You. Because like we said in last week's episode, a lot of your habits, a lot of who you are comes from your ancestry. It comes from those who come before you. Even your thought processes, sometimes the things that we think, the things that we believe, it's because of who raised us. So when you reconnect to who you are, who you were when you came into this lifetime, and you heal that person, you improve on that person, you upgrade that person to the baddest bitch there ever was, that is how you break generational curses.
Episode done. Jam done. She said she needs to say.
And that's the episode. Wait, you got a drink? Cheers to healing generational and
I know what drink is the same color. What ain't your drink?
What? I lately, since my trip back home, I've taken a liking to tequila. It's never going to replace vodka in my life. I will continue to be a vodka girl because
I am
come
not
on.
A vodka girl.
I live. That's vodka my choice.
Vodka don't make me text people in mine and all kind of things.
Really? Oh, maybe that's why I like it so much.
Not in recent years, obviously.
You got a whole husband.
Yeah, the only one that texts is mine. But I am a rum girl through and through. But I also am a tequila girl because I live in Arizona. You know, shout out to the Mexicanos.
I used to hate tequila.
You know what's funny though is like people would be listening to this podcast, right? And we'd have started the podcast with a serious topic, talking about generational trauma, talking about therapy, this all the work you need to do. Everybody would be driving in the car. Yeah, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's my feeling. Experience. And then we'd be like, so what are you drinking?
You guys know that we're very ghetto. Why are you guys acting like you don't know we're ghetto?
I don't know why. Point. My hair ain't even real. Why are you come here expecting serious shit?
It is real because you paid your real money for that bitch.
You are absolutely right. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. No, but you were making some valid points. You were.
Yes. So as far as healing the generational curses or breaking generational curses, rather, it starts within. You start with yourself. So a prime example, and I'm sorry to talk about myself, is parenting, right? A lot of you guys really enjoy the way Dylan and I interact with you guys, even though we're barely on the internet together. Like, we try, but we're just, you know, we give you guys what we can when we can. But I work very hard to be patient with Dylan. I work very hard to be mindful with how I show up as a parent for Dylan. It doesn't take that much work because I am an empath and I can vividly remember how I felt as a child in those times when mother would yell at me. In those times when she didn't hit us often. I'll give her that. She did not hit us often, but she cut with her words and she was a tyrant. And the times when she did hit us, it was team too much. And so I could vividly remember being the child, the teenager, whomever, even the young adult, fuck the 30-year-old that I was every time my mom has disrespected me as a human. And so because of that, it's very easy for me to show up for Dylan and do the opposite of that. But there are times where I have to remind myself, like there have been times where I would want to be mad at him, right? And I have to tell myself, he's a child, Deidre. You know what I mean? Like, instead of being mad at him for something he doesn't know any better about, take the time to work with him, teach him, get him to understand. Because I promise you guys, any lesson Dylan has learned regarding our dynamic, he's never repeated. Like anytime Dylan has crossed me and didn't know better in the moment, he's never repeated that shit. And it's because I took the time. I can proudly say I have never laid a hand on Dylan. I lie once. He had to be about two. No, he was like one and some change. But I was like changing his diaper. And I remember Diamond being like, he was being really like, he was purposefully trolling me. He kept kicking his little legs. He kept pulling the diaper. I was just trying to put this diaper on him and he was purposefully trying me. And Diamond was like, man, just clappy once. So I popped him on the ass. It was so soft. Y'all, I cried. I felt like a terrible human being. And I knew in that moment, I am not meant for beating Sharon. I'm just, so y'all can judge me. I actually don't give a fuck because my child is lit. He's so well behaved. He's a fucking gem. I don't have to hit my son and I will not hit my son. And that in of itself is a form of breaking a generational curse because I would rather talk things through with my son, work with him, get him to understand something so he never repeats it again. Because at the end of the day, he was not born knowing my boundaries, right? So he has crossed me, right? He has done and said things. His tone has been a little off with me. But rather than inflicting fear and pain onto my child, I've taken the time to explain to him when things are inappropriate and unacceptable, and he doesn't repeat them. That's a form of breaking a generational curse. And the only way I was able to do that was to go within and teach myself patience. Because one thing Deidre used to be is an impatient ass bitch. Okay.
I think an important part of what you said is that a lot of times when we look at generational trauma and generational curses, a lot of us are still expecting the healing in that subject to come from the person who inflicted or continued the generational trauma, right? Mm. I was one of those people. It's ironic because what started this podcast was an episode in which you heard me describing some of that generational trauma, right?
Yeah.
Describing my relationship with my mother, describing how complicated that was, and really not giving myself any of the responsibility, which, you know, at the time, recording that episode was a process of me even acknowledging that I had that, you know, those feelings about my relationship with my mom.
Absolutely.
But what, you know, where I am now is almost a completely different place from that. Not, you know, in a place where, like, all of a sudden everything that I experienced with her was okay, but in a place where I recognize that, one, it's generational trauma, meaning mm-hmm. my mother experienced a lot of the same things in different ways, but a lot of the same things from her mother, who probably mm-hmm. experienced a lot of the same shit from her mother. Mm-hmm. And it continued on. So she essentially did the best with what she had. Now, that doesn't excuse it.
But it is what it is.
But it acknowledges that there's a history to it. It didn't just come from her ill will towards me. It didn't just come because she didn't feel like, you know, being affectionate with me. It literally is something that was instilled in her from a mother who had the same thing instilled in her, right?
Exactly.
It allowed me, realizing that allowed me to give my mother some grace. But also it allowed me to remove myself from the victimization of it. Watch me using big words. Anyway.
Come on, shadow work.
But yeah.
Shadow work like Hey Aiza.
Listen, because Hey Aiza can't wait.
Stop playing with me.
But it allowed me to step out of this. And I'm trying to be careful with my words because I recognize that talking about not being the victim sometimes can make people feel like I trying to say, oh, you just feeling sorry for yourself. That's not what I'm saying. My feelings were valid. Every single thing.
Absolutely.
I don't regret a single thing I said on that episode regarding my relationship with my mother because that was my truth. Did it hurt my mother's feelings? Yes. In her response, she was very hurt. She felt like it came out of left field. I had never spoken to her about it. I used the podcast to kind of air all of those feelings out. And that was her learning about that, right? So I recognize where maybe that was a conversation I could have had with my mother. I get it. But my feelings were valid, right? Even with me saying my feelings are valid, a part of me having to grow from that and get through it was me acknowledging that I don't need my mother to apologize to me. If she does, if she acknowledges it, which she acknowledged it, I appreciated it. But I don't need her to apologize to me or become this whole brand new, completely different person for me to heal from the trauma of it, right?
Yeah.
I don't need her to do it. Because like you said, in order for us to break those generational curses, to step out of that, to make sure that our kids or whoever comes after us don't experience that, the only thing we have to do is not repeat the steps, is, you know, heal so that we don't continue on that process. So, yeah, I could stay angry at my mother and be like, she didn't do this, she didn't do that, she didn't hug me enough, blah, blah, blah. Or when I have a daughter, I could just hug my daughter. Like,
deadass.
I could just hug my daughter.
Hug your motherfucking daughter. And you can start with Rue.
I could. But because I'm a person who's still towing that line of whether or not I'll have kids, I recognize that sometimes that generational trauma doesn't even, it's not even kids sometimes that it comes out with. Sometimes the things that my parents did that affect me come out in my relationship. Sometimes it comes out in my friendships. Sometimes it comes out in how I handle myself at work. So going back to shadow work, being honest with myself about what my triggers are, what my history is, but also not using that as a reason why I am the way I am, right? Because a lot of people like to do that.
A lot of people like to use their triggers, their negative experiences as an excuse for their bad behavior. My mom. But sorry, that was so petty. Shout out to my shadow self. but that's the reality, right? And it starts with us. So that's a good way to introduce just this whole aspect of generational trauma. Are you aware of any of your lineages, generational traumas that you yourself are working to combat, aside from like the lack of affection from your mother?
So the lack of affection is a big thing that I'm seeing both on my mother's side and my father's side. Mm-hmm. Parents who abandoned their children and didn't raise them directly. Parents who mm-hmm. raised their children, but from a very stoic and sort of, I'm your parent, I provide for you, but that's it, kind of mm-hmm. relationship. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because my generation, or I guess like myself and my sisters, are kind of the first people to really acknowledge that there was a problem. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of history that I know about my parents, about how they were raised, about the stuff that they experienced. But I will say, based solely on my mother's response to that first episode and everything she said, I already know that there is sexual trauma there. I already know that there is some level of abuse there. Maybe not for her, but in the way she was raised. Mm-hmm. So I know bits and pieces enough to be like, okay, this is where all of this is coming from. This is mm-hmm. where my feeling abandoned and my dislike of feeling abandoned or lack of control comes from, you know?
Yeah. I get that.
Hi, Lonin.
We all are, really and truly. You know what's funny is I feel like we have very similar backgrounds. And I know that that's very common in Caribbean families, right? Is, I don't want to say that lack of affection, but that very, that distance between parents and children of, I am providing for you, I'm doing my job, get out my face. I saw this thing on Instagram. It was obviously supposed to be like a parody, like a joke, but it was so unfortunate that that was the reality of a lot of children from Caribbean households. It was, it was this like reel of this girl sitting there, right? And she was, I guess, the Caribbean mom. And the voiceover that was being used was a kid trying to share something with the mother, but the kid was taking so long to get to the point. And the mom just smacked the kid.
Smacked the shit out of the kid.
You know, I'm sure you saw that reel. And I was sitting there like, oh, baby. Now, luckily, that specific scenario has not been my experience. However, it has been very much, will you hurry the fuck up? Like, what are you trying to say to me? You know what I mean? But Caribbean parents, I'm not speaking for all Caribbean parents. So please stay out the comments, stay out my DMs. I don't want to hear it. But I think that it is a commonality in the Caribbean experience of parents who have zero patience with their children, right? And just feel like the children are fed, the children have their needs met, the children should stay out of my face and stay out of my way. And a lot of that has to do with they have their own shit that they're processing that they probably haven't healed from. I know I come from a long line of people who've dealt with sexual assault, sexual abuse in some fashion. You know what I mean? I always say, because y'all know I'm an astrologer in these streets, I always say my bloodline, all the women in my bloodline have a heavy influence of the planet Venus, which is like the goddess archetype, right? Very beautiful, very attractive. But with beauty and attraction comes sexual predators. So that's something that we've all experienced in some fashion. You know what I mean? Both with outsiders and also even with like relatives, people within the family unit, you know, assaulting each other and things such as that. And some people have spoken up, some people have not. I think that a big thing within my family is people not speaking up enough, though. And when they speak up, it's kind of like lashing out in a point where it's like people learning about it from each other during a fight. And it's like, wait a minute, I didn't know this was going on. Wait. And it almost becomes weaponized. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's a lot. But everybody has some level of ancestral trauma, especially within the Black community. Of course, everybody, whether you're Black or not, there is ancestral trauma in some regard. But of course, within the Black community, no matter how great of a home you come from, right? No matter how well put together your family is, no matter how much, you know, money your parents may have, there's a level of ancestral trauma through epigenetics because of the Black experience, especially in America.
It definitely almost always shows itself in the way that your parents raise you and how they interact with you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we all have bad relationships with our parents. But for some people, it might be your parent and the way they dote on you because they're trying to be the reverse of what they receive.
Drag me.
It might be your parent pressuring you to succeed well in school and succeed in all things and do all these things because they want you to be afforded the opportunities that they were not. Maybe they grew up in poverty. Maybe they grew up in struggle and they so want the opposite of that, that they are sometimes going a bit too far in the way that they pressure you and raise you mm-hmm. and want you to do things. I try to stray from speaking about my husband's, you know, personal life and his life story on the podcast, because obviously that's his story to tell. But I will touch on his relationship, for example, with his dad and some of the struggles that he had in the past with his dad and his dad sort of staying on him about succeeding, completing school, getting a good job, completing school, getting a good job. It was always about that, right? And they butted heads a lot, because sometimes for Steven, it was like, yo, like, let me figure this out at my own pace. Mm-hmm. But what I ended up learning about his dad was that he had been working from a really young age and mm-hmm. he had to be self-reliant and take care of himself for a really, really long time, because mm-hmm. he grew up in this era where it was understood that men were here to work, to provide for mm. their families at all costs, no matter what, you know, how it affected you, you know? So in learning that, everything made sense. I was like, okay, so this is why he's so on top of you, to make sure that you can be self-sufficient and take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Because his, you know, his trauma, his form of trauma is growing up thinking that that was it.
That was his purpose. Yeah. But isn't that beautiful when we, and you know, one of the, aside from going within and working on yourself, one of the most effective ways to heal ancestral trauma is to connect with your elders, especially obviously those who are still living. You know what I mean? Form that connection with them. Learn about your grandparents and their parents. Learn about those relatives that you never met. You know what I mean? Make time. Like, people sleep on just having access to grandparents. And it's like, talk to your elders. Get to know them. Like, when they're trying to give you random shit, I promise you, in the moment, it's going to be such a pain in the ass. But when they die, you're going to cherish that random shit they're trying to give you. Okay. Form connections with your elders and ask about things. Ask, what was this person like? What was that person like? Who do I remind you of? I when I was growing up, I would always be told by everybody that I reminded everybody of my Auntie Chris. My Auntie Chris is like, oh, she's just so sweet, right? She's like sweet as pie. And I was like, oh, that's really flattering. You know, like, you know, Auntie Chris also like bakes a lot and she's super creative and all that jazz. But it's always good when people can tell you like who you remind them of and things such as that, because putting those little pieces together, it's like a puzzle. You know what I mean? And that's one thing
I wish I would have done. I wish I would have asked more questions, especially of my paternal grandmother. So mm-hmm. I only have two grandparents left, and that's my mom's side. And we don't have that close, you know, grandparent-grandchild relationship to where I've mm-hmm. felt comfortable, you know, spending enough time with them and asking questions. Yeah. So instead, you know, for those of you who don't have access to your grandparents, even asking your parents about them, about how what they were like, or just kind of thinking back to, yeah, or thinking back to maybe when they were alive mm-hmm. and what your relationship with them was like, what type of people they were, and trying to learn from that, even that, because my grandmother, you know, is gone. She's been gone for 3 years, and with her passing, there was a lot of regret of like, I didn't ask her enough questions. I didn't talk to her enough. Like, I was raised by her, essentially, you know, for a good part of my life. Like, it was like both my parents and my grandmother. But she wasn't the person who would kind of sit with you and tell you about her whole life and every bad thing that's ever happened to her, and like trauma. And she was very old school. But one thing I learned from her through observation is how she took care of people. Like, mm-hmm. her whole life was taking care of other people, taking care of her siblings, taking care of her parents when they became older, taking care of her own kids, her husband, other people's kids, mm-hmm. so grandkids, neighbors' kids. Almost everybody in that neighborhood at some point has been babysat by my grandmother.
Yeah, same.
So, yeah, like, she was this you know, and again, it didn't hit me until she died, how much impact she had on the people around her just by being a caring person. Now, it wasn't all good. A lot of my grandmother's life was spent caring for other people so much to the point where it was self-sacrificing, mm-hmm. you know, where I'm sure there's things my grandmother didn't get to do, things she didn't get to speak up for herself about, mm-hmm. Times where maybe she just wanted a break or wanted it to be about her and it wasn't about her because she was taking mm-hmm. care of everybody else.
Yeah.
I've tried to take those lessons and really try to learn from them so that I don't follow that path, because maybe I am like her in that I love taking care of other people. I love being there for people. But in trying to remember that her being there for other people sometimes came at a cost to her as a person, right? Mm-hmm. And like, that's where you start, you know, learning from generations before you and kind of, you know, recognizing the good and recognizing the bad too, and being like, okay, yeah. I can take this, but I can't take that. You know, it's not all bad. Yes, yeah. Generational trauma is a thing and generational trauma is negative, but there's also ways that I feel we can start to heal generational trauma by recognizing some of the good things maybe that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like our family members and our, you know, generations before us brought with them and gave to us.
Yeah. How do you honor your ancestors?
I'm learning. It gonna sound weird. I don't care though. So a big part of me learning the spiritual journey and all of that stuff is even talking to them. I never mm-hmm. used to talk to them before because again, wow. Raised Christian.
Yeah.
Only person you need to be talking to in your head is Jesus.
Ain't that so, some shit? Ain't that some shit?
I know. I like, shout out to Jesus, but like, you know, I feel yeah. different. So now even just thanking them for things, which I mm-hmm. never used to before.
Yeah.
Recognizing that they've had a role in some of the things that I have, that some of them were praying for future generations, not even knowing they were praying for me, you know? Same my girl. Grandmother being one of those people. I think, and again, sometimes I say things, it sounds crazy, but I'm going to explain. Girl, my grandmother passing and me recognizing that she had now become one of my ancestors allowed me to put a face to the rest of my ancestors and kind of recognize who they were in my life. Because yeah. it was hard for me to say, oh, well, my ancestors, because we're like, I don't know why. Like, I didn't yeah. know them. And I didn't feel it was so easy to have a connection with this like entity or people that I didn't know. But in recognizing her and my relationship with her, I was like, if that's what my ancestors look like, if that's how they love me, if that's how they don't pray over me, cool. Like, shout out to yeah. y'all.
Dead ass.
Definitely honor them through, you know, being grateful for certain things, asking them for guidance, acknowledging them, giving them space in my house when I cleanse my space.
Yeah.
Like the first time I cleansed this house when we moved in, you remember, I was like, somebody that ain't as fucked as me one in this yeah.
yep. So I was like,
you can go, but ancestors, by all means, make yourselves at home, you know, pull up a chair. Kick it.
Oh my God, I love it.
So just it. even something as simple as giving them space in your life.
Absolutely. Like,
I feel honors them, you know, but that's just my little personal thing.
Listen, so for one, right, there's those ways, there's very intense, you know, very intense spiritual practices, but saying no as a complete sentence is a way of honoring your ancestors. Taking a fucking nap is a form of honoring your ancestors. Okay. Being true to yourself is a form of honoring your ancestors, because there are things that our ancestors could not do that we have the access to do. You know what I mean? For me, obviously, y'all know I got a whole altar. There's the third bedroom in my apartment is referred to as whose room? Hey, Aiza.
It's grandmother's room.
It's grandmother's room. The third bedroom in my apartment is grandma's room. And the reason why we call it grandma's room is because that's where her altar lives. I'm actually in the process of adding more ancestors to that altar. Like you, it was easier to connect to ancestors because there was somebody whose smell I could think of, whose hug I could think of, whose the sound of that person's voice I could think of. Before that, before my grandmother, I knew I had ancestors, obviously, right? but there weren't any that I could connect closely with. So now that like grandma's been gone for a while, I think this December is going to make 9 years since she passed away. And I made her altar. I think I made her altar like earlier this year or like at the end of last year. But of course, having her altar isn't a form of ancestor, you know, honoring her. You know, I tend to her altar minimum once a week. I sit at the altar. Grandma and I used to color together a lot. So I sit at my grandma's altar and I just color. I color pictures specifically for her. Of course, like I said, it's funny because even the way you parent your children is a form of honoring your ancestors. You know what I mean? Making sure to exhibit patience with my Dylan is a form of honoring my grandmother. My grandmother had one son and three daughters. And there was always this running joke that Uncle Sheldon was hands down grandma's favorite. So sometimes I jokingly, I'm like, yeah, the way I treat Dylan is a form of honoring grandma. Like, obviously she loved her children equally. You know what I mean? Her youngest child was her one boy child. So, you know, in Caribbean households, you know what they say about the mamas in our community. But obviously I also honor my ancestors through the work that I do, because had it not been for my ancestors, I wouldn't be at the place that I'm in right now. I thank them every single day for protecting me, because I know that I am surrounded by a whole army of fucking warriors. My ancestors are a whole bunch of freaking, they be doing the most. They used to do the most in the, you know, when they were here on earth, and they doing the most on the other side right now. So I honor them by speaking about them, by expressing gratitude, by teaching Dylan about them, teaching Dylan that he's safe here on earth, and that there are people that he can't see or feel that protect him as well. That's another way that I honor my ancestors, because my Dylan is going to know. He's going to continue to know. He also sometimes recommends that I put things on grandma's altar, which is really sweet.
I love that. I love that in not only in honoring her, you're not only honoring her, but you're also allowing your son to have a relationship with her even after she's passed on, and to like acknowledge who she is. I think that for a lot of people, if that's not like a specific, I guess, you know, set part of your culture, mm-hmm. Sometimes our ancestors can kind of be left behind and forgotten because we don't mm-hmm. continue to acknowledge them. And we say, oh, your grandmother mm-hmm. was XYZ person, but we don't teach our kids about these people and like what they yes. meant to us. So
have you seen Coco?
I have. We can talk about Coco though, because listen.
We need to.
I watched Coco for the first time 2 days after I came back from my grandmother's funeral. And
That's very soon, hey, Isa.
I did not know Coco was about somebody. Grandma, I thought Coco was about that dog. Okay.
A dog?
Yeah. And the thing is, I did not cry until the very end, which if you haven't watched Coco, I'm going to spoil it. Did not cry until the very end when Mama Coco showed up on the altar for the family. Mm-hmm. Lost my shit. Was like, I miss my grandmother. But anyway.
Yeah, that shit. Ooh, that movie. I could have only get through that movie once. I really thought that I would watch it multiple times. Mm-hmm. Oof, my heart space.
But as much as I may be reaching, that movie, as it's a good example of honoring your ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's look how
a very good example mm-hmm. of generational trauma.
Indeed.
Ooh, and how indeed. Sometimes generations of people can just hold on to this one thing that happened umpteen years ago and carry it on and carry it on and carry it on, right?
Mm. Like to the point where they're not allowing this baby to be true to himself exactly. because of their hurt
and causing him harm by doing that.
Baby, that's the fucking episode.
Disney, call me no. Pixar, call me no. I am very good at relating traumatic life events to animated movies. Mm-hmm. Talk your shit about cartoons, but a lot of the things that, you know, we bring up it's these deep shit. Conversations is real shit, but it also comes up in these cartoons. And that's why I love Disney and Pixar now, because they're really trying to incorporate these life-altering lessons into these mm-hmm. movies so that kids have a way to talk about it, so that parents yep. have a way to talk about it with their kids. So in a way, although, yes, Disney is this big monopoly capitalist machine, yes, we get that, but the people who are making these decisions to make these films the way they are, in their own way, are helping these different families with things like generational trauma. Because they're helping these younger parents who want to be different types of parents with the tools to talk to their kids about grief, to talk to their kids about, you know, well, what happens when you want one thing, but your parents have another expectation for you? What should you do? You know,
i.e. Soul.
Yeah.
Have you seen Soul?
I have. That movie made me cry. Listen, Pixar, Disney alone don't make me cry later. Disney Pixar?
That's a whole other beast.
I promise you I will be crying. But also, Moana was a beautiful movie. It's not that Moana is sad. It's that the grandmother dies in Moana specifically. And yeah, the grandmother in Moana, I'll send you a picture after this. My grandmother looked almost exactly like her.
My great grandmother looks like her, and my mom
hairstyle, everything. Like,
my mom was so the way Moana is attached to her grandmother, that's how my mother was with her grandmother. And it was that same, like, oh, the crazy lady of the family and the rebellious kid. My mother and her grandmother had that thing, and I never got to meet my great grandmother. My great grandmother died maybe like 2 months before Diamond and I were born. She actually, speaking of ancestors, she made quite the entrance into my home a few months ago. And I was like, Grandma Teresa, it could have been a lot less dramatic than this.
Hey, girl. How you doing?
Lady, like, we could have done something way less dramatic. But I'm so glad she's here. I'm so honored to be. Like, when I tell you, I don't play about my ancestors, you know. I am so grateful to be a part of them. So grateful. I love that we're even having this discussion, because it's not something that was part of our upbringing. I can't speak for everybody listening.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the angels and the, you know, Jesus and all that shit. And it's like these people who we fucking know, we have their funerals, we mourn a little bit, and that's it. No.
But we treat the passing of a lot of people treat the passing of our older relatives, our ancestors, the same way we treat generational trauma. Like,
we experience it right there and we sweep it under there.
We sweep it under the rug. Yes, we grieve and we mourn them, all that thing, all that good stuff, but we never keep them around. We kind of let them go. And I get letting people go is important, right? Letting the physical body go, letting, you know, that person's life go. But I really and truly believe that, like, if you want to have an altar in your space to honor your ancestors, do that. If you want to teach your kids about who their great grandparents were, absolutely do that, because we should know our history. Mm-hmm. Because so much, especially for Black people, so much of our ancestral history was taken from us people. Mm-hmm. So we should be teaching our kids about the ancestors we can remember, because we have ancestors who couldn't remember theirs because they didn't know where they came from.
Have you ever seen In Our Mother's Garden on Netflix?
No, I haven't.
You have to watch it. Oh my God.
Is that what made me cry?
Oh yeah, definitely. I cried a couple times. So fucking good. Oh my God. So fucking good. I'm gonna watch it after this fucking recording. That shit was so good. But you know what? And not to spoil it, but you made reference to your grandmother and how she took care of everyone. My grandma was the same. And even they made reference to that. And I feel like I've talked about it in lives, is that's referred to as the big mama complex, right? There's always some woman in the Black family unit who everybody knows they can go to. The neighborhood, the relatives, just everybody. And my grandmother was the same. Even when she passed away, there was some cousin of a cousin of a cousin and his daughter staying at my grandmother's house. And we were all like, what? Like, so it's a lot of that. And even that's something that we even have to let go of. And I know something that I've been working with a lot of my clients on is that hyper independence that Black women tend to have. And we have that because we've been raised by such strong matriarchal figures. And I know that right now there's a lot of conversation and work that's being done for Black women and Black men to stop being at odds and come back together to form units again. And that's going to take some time. It's uncomfortable, but it's happening. It's necessary. And so many of us, we have to make sure that we're letting go of what our grandmothers were doing, right? It's in our nature sometimes to take on so much, not speak up, and then be stressed, be miserable, be upset, then either explode or die too young. You know what I mean? Because
so that's definitely a topic that we can bring into this, is how generational trauma ends up affecting the way that we navigate relationships. Mm-hmm. So there's this, you know, way that men are raised that's very much toxic masculinity, very much you're here to be a provider, very much we don't acknowledge emotions. Mm. Like toxic masculinity doesn't just show up out of nowhere, right? The reason a lot of men in society grow up in a certain way is because generations before them were raised in the same way, right?
Yep.
In the same way that so many Black women were quote unquote raised by their mothers, whereas their brothers were loved by their mothers, you know, just things like that.
Yeah.
And then when we come together, we have these different ideologies and different views of how to navigate relationships, how to love each other, who should do what the expectation is of blah, blah, blah. But also, there are so many people whose expectations of their partners are, you know,
surrogate parents, basically.
Surrogate parents, but also attached to what love looked like generations before you.
Listen, let me.
And it don't look like that anymore.
It don't. And even further to that, even the way we pick our partners, I will never forget. This was when I first started doing the work that I do. I remember working with this client and her love life came up. And she was just complaining about feeling like her partners, there's always this disconnect, right? She's always feeling like her partners either are insensitive or, you know, they're cheaters, whatever the case may be. And so I know what placements to look at on her chart to know what kind of man she's attracted to, right? So I said, well, what kind of men do you like? She starts describing a particular kind of man. I'm looking at the placement that would tell me what she would be attracted to, and it's not matching up. Something told me to look at the placement that would talk more about her father, and everything she was describing was her father. So I said, I said, what's your relationship like to your dad? She's like, oh, my father is amazing. He treats me like a queen. He's always I said, so how did he treat your mother? And in that moment, she was like, holy fuck. And she was like, my father was amazing to me, but he was terrible to my mother. And I was like, well, that's it right there. A lot of times, men and women too feel like you treat your daughter like a queen, right? And this is going to tell her that this is the kind of example that she needs, and this is the kind of man she's going to want. But you're not looking at how you're treating her mama. And what happens is that's what she internalizes, is that you accept a man even though he's cheating on you. You accept a man even though he's like dishonest, even though he's insensitive. And this is not a topic about relationships, but even just those examples right there. People go don't back realize
to generational trauma.
It goes back to generational trauma, and it's just a cycle, you know. But we got
a lot of what we think our love languages are is just that generational trauma popping back up, right?
Indeed.
And that's not to say your love language is wrong, but a lot of people believe that sometimes the love language that we lean more towards is, for some of us, not for everybody. Because I got a shit ton of gifts when I was younger, and that's my love language now. But the one we did not receive as a child is often what we try to lean towards or need, because like we're missing that from, you know, that mother or father before us, that generation before us. So we talked a lot about all these layers of generational trauma, right? People listening to this episode like, fuck, this shit coming from every direction. Yes, it is.
I know. We're doing a lot.
So let's talk about, I guess, solutions, right? We talked about it in the previous episode when it comes to shadow work. Shadow work as it relates to generational trauma. Should people be going to their mother and saying, you need to tell me sorry for this. You need to fix this about yourself in order to heal their generational trauma?
No. Find a way to approach your mother in a way that's palatable for her and ask for that conversation, right? And rather than telling mother what she needs to do, I'm going to share what I learned in therapy, which is something that is very effective, is using your I statements. Mom, I hope we can have a conversation one day. I would really like for us to talk about some of the things that I've experienced during my upbringing. You know, you don't have to be as formal, but
don't lose that fuck on a podcast. Talk to Shifos.
Please don't. Yeah. But if you get to the point where you're like, hey, mom, you know, and even if it's something in your life that currently happened that you realize is a result of your childhood, like let's say you just go through a really fucked up breakup and you realize, motherfuck, my attachment style is all wonky because of these past experiences. Hey, mom, you know what? I've been reflecting. I really want us to talk about my childhood, right? And if your mom is open to that conversation, rather than hitting her with the, you need to apologize for X, Y, Z, and blase, blase, you focus on yourself and your feelings and your experience. Mom, I know you were working hard. I know you had X, Y, Z going on. I know that you probably were doing what you knew, but I just don't know if I ever had the opportunity to let you know how my feelings were impacted by the ways that you spoke to me, whatever the case may be. Make sure you have some concrete examples. Make sure you can reference things that you both are going to remember. Try to don't let your emotions get the better of you. Do not let your emotions get the better of you. If you feel like every time you think about those experiences and your emotions start to get heightened, then it's not time to have that conversation.
It's not. So what happens in cases where the parent might be a toxic parent, where there is no room to have that conversation because maybe exposing myself to this person and that conversation might do me more harm than good. Maybe I've tried to have that conversation and obviously that wasn't productive. Mm-hmm. Am I now unable to heal my generational trauma as a result?
So it's funny because I was just about to segue into, before you go into a conversation like that with your mother, you have to detach yourself from your desired outcome. You have to prepare yourself for the best possible outcome and the worst possible outcome. And you have to think about, if my mom's reaction to me expressing my experience results in her lashing out further, you have to think about what you're willing to sacrifice for that, if that makes sense. In my case, I don't have a relationship with my mother right now. I don't want a relationship with my mother because my mom's response to anything that she sees as a criticism is her victimizing herself, her making excuses, and her pretty much calling me ungrateful. And so for me, I've went through that phase of being like, yo, she did the best she could with what she had, et cetera, et cetera. Me being willing to deal with my mom with a long-handled spoon, if that makes sense, right? Me accepting my upbringing for what it was, not taking it personally, giving her grace. But the thing was I was moving past my upbringing, but she would keep bringing it up, right? And every time she would bring it up, I'm not going to lie to you. I make it seem like everything was pleasant. So if you ask me a question, I'm going to give you the answer. But then when you don't like the answer, now here we are at odds yet again. I got to a point where I recognized and realized that was not healthy for me. And I had to come to terms with the fact that I would rather be out of my mother's life than in it and in constant turmoil. You know what I mean? But that's for me. What you may have to do is really think about how valuable that conversation is. If you and your mom have never had that conversation, it's worth it to at least give it a shot. If you try that conversation and your mom is hella against it, then you have to sit with yourself and determine, okay, I may have to have a more surface level relationship with my mom, or I may just have to cope with it over here and let my mom sweep it under the rug on her end. But on my end, I have to heal and process it on my own. You know what I mean? Through my shadow work, through my therapy, et cetera, with my siblings. You know what I mean? Or alone, because you never know. Your siblings might not have the same perspective as you.
That's another thing I wanted to touch on not too much, because we are going to have a future episode on relationships with siblings and all of that stuff, which I cannot wait for. But a part of healing generational trauma for me has been trying to improve my relationship with my siblings to where it looks nothing like my mother's relationship with her siblings. I have uncles and aunts who I didn't have that close you in my house everyday relationship with, because that's just not the relationship my mother had with her siblings, right? They didn't grow up together. There was a lot of trauma there. There was a lot of resentment there of my grandmother raised XYZ, but didn't raise these other ones. Like there's layers and layers and layers, to the point where I developed a fear of like, what if me and my siblings end up like that? What if I have kids and they don't only see their cousins on like special family occasions because my mom and my aunts weren't as close, right? Mm-hmm. So what I've tried to do is in those areas, and me and my sister, I'm still weird about it. Like, we don't try and hug, and it's always a fucking theatrical scene. Kind of be like, yuck, man, like, don't touch me. But, like, hug me, but, like, don't touch me.
Y'all are so funny.
So, you know, even though it's still, you know, funny for us and awkward and weird, I'm trying to hug my siblings more. I'm trying to express to them that I'm proud of them for doing certain things. I'm trying to check on them, call them, have relationships with them, because I recognize growing up in the same house don't mean you gonna have a relationship with your siblings. It's not that easy. And in that, I'm trying to heal that generational trauma, but also because I recognize my siblings will have children even if I don't. And if I can do one thing in changing generational trauma, that will be being the aunt for my nieces and nephews that my aunts wasn't for me growing up. And I wasn't to say my aunts were horrible. Like, I love a lot of my aunts and my uncles, but they weren't the aunts and uncles who I could call and cry in and say, I had this horrible day in school and I don't know how to talk to my mother about it and I need to talk to you. It wasn't like that. So for me, I want to create that type of space for my niece, for my nephews, right? Making sure that they know we don't have that kind of family. Y'all can come to us, you know?
Exactly.
So that's the steps that I'm taking. Does that mean I go into all my aunts and uncles and saying, you wasn't there for me, fuck you? Like, no.
No.
They have nothing. Right. Like, they have no part to play in me trying to heal those generational curses, that generational trauma. I'm using them as an example of what not to do, but I'm not putting the responsibility of the healing on them. The same way that I think a lot of people, some of your parents might give you the space to have that conversation. Some of your parents might not. Some of your parents have passed on. Some of you have already chosen to take the path of, I don't want to have a relationship with this person. That doesn't mean that you will never heal from that trauma. That just means that your route to healing is going to look different. And that's okay.
It's perfectly fine, babe. It's perfectly fine.
So,
oh my gosh.
Before we wrap this shit up, anything else that you want to touch on, girl?
No, I feel like the episode ended like 25 minutes ago, if we're being honest. But I'm just being silly. No, honestly.
I don't know if I've acknowledged it on previous episodes since we came back for season 6, but y'all, we crossed the 20,000 download threshold.
We did! Thank you guys so much!
So, it's lit. It's lit. We were at 10K downloads less than a year ago. Now we're at 20K.
Oh, look at y'all. So, thank y'all so much. Oh my God. I'm so grateful.
Y'all are the best.
And you know, it's so funny. I did a reading for one of our biggest supporters earlier today. I respect my client's confidentiality, so I'm not going to talk about it. And it took everything in me not to tell this person, like, as soon as we're done talking, I'm going to record the podcast. But yes, we're so grateful for y'all. Thank you guys so much for the support. Thank you guys so much for writing with us through all. We've been on such a path, such a journey, all our changes, all our fun experiences. You guys have just made this journey so worth it. And you guys are the reason why.
Shout out to our patrons also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You guys are very much appreciated. We're looking for, trust me. Hey, Aiza and I got some tricks up our sleeves.
We do. It's going to be a really good season. You guys are into the season already by the time this episode comes out. But definitely shout out to our patrons. I don't plug this enough, but listen, if you have $3 to spare every month, you can become a Good Up Podcast patron. That means you receive episodes early, you receive bonus content, you have a say in the types of episodes that we do, you have input, you have feedback, you get to have direct conversations with us, all that good stuff. So if you're interested in that, visit www.patreon.com/goodupodcast. Otherwise, we will let you go. Enjoy your Tuesday. Walk into work, open a door, and tell that bitch Candace that a print ain't walking because she break that fuck. Anyway.
Yep. It's definitely her fault, trifling whore.
All right, people, we love you. Deidre, tell the people and bye.
Good Up is hosted and produced by Deidre Ritter and Hayaiza Quinones Ivory, and is a proud member of the Kickin' It family. Find us on all social media platforms @GoodUpPod. Use #GoodUpTuesday to continue the conversation and get access to exclusive bonus content at patreon.com/goodup podcast.